Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere.
Welcome to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we cover topics that are important to rural Minnesota. My name is Julie Tesh, President and CEO of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. Today, we are going to be discussing a topic that often flies under the radar in rural Minnesota, and that is homelessness. Our guest today is Rhonda Otteson, and she is with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. Welcome, Rhonda.
Thanks for having me, Julie. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and about the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless?
Sure. Well, the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless is a policy and advocacy organization. We are focused on ensuring statewide housing stability for Minnesotans with a goal of ending homelessness. We work on policy and advocacy at the state level. We have about 100 member organizations across the state who work with us in this effort to end homelessness. Personally, I came onto the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless about a year and a half ago. And during that time, of course, we've experienced a pandemic. So it has really changed our work at the Capitol in terms of advocacy, but it's also been a time of really pivoting towards solutions during this time and seeing the dire needs. We had a crisis in homelessness and housing before the pandemic hit. And so we've really been focused on solutions, even remotely, that we can advocate for. I guess I got my start as a Head Start parent. My journey, I worked with, it used to be called Heartland Community Action Agency, but and now it's called United Community Action Agency or Partnership in Southwest Minnesota. They serve 9 counties. And so I started as a Head Start parent and then finished my bachelor's degree and went back to school and got my master's. And during that time, I was really able to grow in that organization and finally worked on housing and homelessness programs. And so that's really how I became connected to this work, but always knowing that home is the foundation for everything. So this job just, you know, fits squarely with what I believe in, the mission of the organization, and just personally what I believe in. When I was young, we depended on the Section 8 program, which is a federal program that helped pay rent for our families so that we could have a safe and stable home. And that really contributed to the stability that we had in my high school years for sure. But there were times when we had to move and we had to go stay with my great aunt in her one bedroom apartment because we had nowhere else to go for the time being. And so experiencing homelessness and that instability gives me, I think, some lived experience and a lens that I can look through, but also knowing that there are so many people with solutions across our state, our member organizations, people with lived experience, and other professionals in the field and partners, people who are passionate about the work. So it's nice to be in this space, and I'm happy to be a part of advancing solutions that can help create housing stability for every Minnesotan.
Wow, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you ended up with a great organization where I can tell you really have a passion for it. And obviously, like you said, that lived experience that really, it's when you're doing this work, it's so important because you can relate to people.
Yeah, and I think anybody would say it's great to be in a job that you feel that you truly believe in and that you feel like you're making a difference.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump in here. I know, obviously, we hear about and see, if we're in the Twin Cities metro area, we see homelessness, you know, in different areas, whether it's downtown or just anywhere. But, you know, in rural areas, it's not as apparent. And so why don't you tell our listeners about, one, does homelessness exist in rural areas? And two, why aren't we seeing it? Why don't we physically see it as much as in urban areas?
Yeah, that's actually a question that I get all the time. Does homelessness exist? I actually live in Willmar, and working in that community for a long time around issues of housing and homelessness and anti-poverty work, people would ask me all the time about homelessness. Is it really here? And yes, it truly is in greater Minnesota and rural communities all across the state. I think one of the things that makes rural homelessness a little bit different is that it's less concentrated and visible than it might be in the metropolitan area. One third of people experiencing homelessness in Minnesota are from the metro area. So that would be Hennepin, Ramsey, and then a third from the suburbs, and then another third in greater Minnesota. So that would include, you know, our regional centers and as well as smaller towns and rural places. The other part of homelessness too is that people are doubled up, and that's really hard to count and to see. So even though with the Wilder study or point in time counts that happen annually to try to get our arms around what is the true extent of the issue of homelessness across the state, we know that that's an undercount. So while that might be 10 or 12,000 people, the true estimate is closer to 20,000.
Wow.
So especially in rural areas, it's hard to go out and find where people are. You know, if somebody's in a storage shed or in a garage, sleeping in their car, walking around 24-hour businesses, you know, those are just some of the places we've heard reports from our member organizations or about people digging a hole, like a hole in the side of a riverbank to try to stay warm. You know, people will make really hard decisions about how they're going to survive. And I think with this latest cold snap, you know, it's become a stark reminder of just how dire the circumstances can be when we don't have spaces and shelters to bring people inside. People die.
Absolutely. Yeah, you think of that word, at least myself, you know, I'm nice and warm in my house. But yeah, you think of so many people and you don't know where they're at. Why? I'm thinking pre-pandemic, and then also now during the pandemic, but pre-pandemic, what are the reasons? What's the main cause of homelessness? And kind of into the pandemic as well, how is that? And I'm sure it's increased the number of homeless people.
Yeah, the greatest risk factor for becoming homeless is paying unaffordable rent. You know, it's, some people would characterize it as a math problem, but it's economics.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working in a minimum wage job, you have to work a lot of hours to be able to pay the average rent. And that really varies across the state in terms of what an affordable unit can look like. But some of those resources that I talked about that really made a difference for my family, like the Section 8 program. Well, the waiting lists for that program are really, really long. So if you can't get that assistance, then you are moving into a place, and one bad thing can happen and people can be facing eviction. Mm-hmm. Of course, a pandemic has really, I think, turned everything upside down in this area too, because so many people have been hit financially, and people who are most at risk are closest to becoming homeless in one small thing. And there have been lots of big and small things during the pandemic that have pushed people closer. So, you know, we really advocated in 2020 for rental assistance, which the governor and lieutenant governor released a significant amount of money from the federal dollars that went through and helped lots of people get caught up on their past due rent and utilities to make sure that they have a secure place. When housing is homelessness, or housing is healthcare.
Housing is healthcare.
Right now, I think it's more apparent than ever that housing is healthcare.
I had never thought of it that way, but that is so, so true, especially in the middle of a pandemic, but also in this season, this winter. You know, that is so very true. I'm playing that in my mind right now. That's wow. Yeah. A different way of thinking about it and how vital all of that is. You know, when we talk about different programs and whatnot, are we still under a moratorium on being able to be evicted with the pandemic? Do you know?
Yes, we are. We have one of the strongest eviction moratoriums in the nation.
Okay.
In Minnesota, and that's really helped. It's also helped that we've received federal dollars as injections to help renters get caught up. Sure. We know that landlords are also a partner in the solution to end homelessness, because we need housing and we need those landlords to be able to operate as well. So getting those resources, it's really essential to the economics of housing in Minnesota.
Absolutely. And obviously homelessness and housing go hand in hand. And I know we were talking beforehand, there's a lack of just general housing in Minnesota, especially in greater Minnesota. It really is fascinating to see. And I think it's something that people don't often think about unless you are trying to find a place to live. But then on top of that, trying to find an affordable place to live when you don't make a lot of money, it is a real issue.
Yeah, it really is. It's estimated that across Minnesota, we're lacking about over 50,000 units at this current time. And by 2030, we need to build in an additional 300,000 units. And that's really across the whole spectrum of housing. You know, we need all types of housing for people and for communities to thrive. And so for seniors, that means maybe moving into a smaller place that's fully ADA accessible. For young families, it could mean, you know, multiple bedrooms for their children and to accommodate the needs of a family. And for youth, it might mean a studio apartment. For other people, it's home ownership opportunities, you know, just being able to have that housing stock so people can move into what they want and what they need at a price point that will ensure their stability.
Absolutely. I think about dilapidated housing too. I think there's a lot of houses out there that could be rehabbed or something could be done with, but either A, people don't know what to do with it, or B, they don't even want to. Why even start dealing with that? But there's houses out there that probably need to be tore down and rebuilt back up as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a report, and it's from a while ago. I'm not an expert on what the housing stock looks like in Minnesota, but I do know that I remember looking at that in greater Minnesota and the housing stock. I know in Southwest Minnesota, it is older than the rest of the housing stock in the state. So finding those creative solutions to partner with housing and redevelopment authorities and cities who want to invest those dollars or help those homeowners keep or upgrade their housing, that's also a great way to keep the current housing stock as housing stock, you know, keep it in the mix. We don't want to be losing housing. That's exactly the wrong direction we want to go in terms of creating homes for people across the state.
Absolutely. And when you think about housing, you think of everything else that goes with it, like infrastructure. And I've talked about it on this program before, but the little town I'm from, it's a town of 229, and they are, last summer and then this summer, they're in the middle of completely redoing their water infrastructure. So storm sewers, everything. And the water prices, the increases that they're going to see, I'm very curious how they do end up, because they are receiving, you know, some subsidies from the state and whatnot, and they receive grants and stuff. But it's I don't know what the average income is in the little town, but I know it's not very high. And so if you add on $100 a month on water bills, that means something. And you might have a roof over your head, but for how long, and can you pay your water bill or your trash or electricity? I mean, there's all those little variables that, you know, people don't typically think about when you're on the edge.
Yeah. Those costs go into the overall affordability, right? You have your rent or mortgage, and then you have your utilities. And those are two big pieces of the budget for a lot of households and families. So when those are affordable, that is a good thing for people, for families, for communities. You know, the other thing I was going to point out is that we really see housing as infrastructure. Mm-hmm. We see shelters as infrastructure. The biggest funding mechanism actually in Minnesota to build housing is through the housing infrastructure bond.
Ah, nice.
Yeah. So, you know, communities need housing. Without that, they can't thrive and grow. We need businesses, we need water, sewer, roads, and we need housing as well. And so those are really key pieces to a thriving community.
Sure. So you're in Wilmer. Mm-hmm. If I were driving through Wilmer, I'm guessing I know the answer to this, but would it be very apparent that there are homeless people in Wilmer, or how far would I have to dig to find those people who need help that are homeless?
I am in Wilmer. You would not see any tents or encampments in our community. You probably wouldn't see anybody with any signs, like on street corners or anything like that. But if you went to Walmart at night, or you were driving around town for a little while, you might see people walking with very large backpacks. And you'd start to notice some of the little nuance of what it looks like for people who are trying to survive and they don't have access to a hotel. If you went to our local hotel, there would be many rooms. You wouldn't know who, but there would be many rooms that were leased by a local community action agency to provide housing for people. And if you went to one of the local churches, if they were part of the Family Promise program, which is a sort of a church of the week model, mm-hmm. there would be families there who don't have a home. They're being served and receiving housing through the church.
Is that year round?
It is, yes.
Nice. I know in Mankato, I guess I haven't looked at it yet this winter, but I know the last couple of years there were several churches that went together. And like you said, it's like the church of the week and they rotate around. And I know they're trying to find a more permanent place for the winter. But you just think of that, you know, you're moving constantly. And a week is actually a nice time to be able to stay in one spot, but then you have to get up and move again.
Yeah. In a lot of communities, you know, that might be a stepping stone towards moving to having a permanent shelter. It really depends on what that community wants and needs and what community members kind of rally around, what some of their zoning ordinances might be. That comes into play. I'm certainly not an expert in zoning ordinances and how that works, but, you know, to put a shelter in a community, requires sometimes some changes in zoning.
The next question I was going to ask actually has to do with, do we know the ages? Do we have any idea of what the ages of the homeless population is? You know, I think of during the pandemic, everyone's affected, but I think of kids especially, you know, school age kids and not being able to go to school in person. And so you think of the homeless population and how do we have any idea of how many kids there might be or what the ages are?
Yeah, children and youth actually comprise half the homeless population in Greater Minnesota. A lot of people are really surprised by that, but yeah, children and youth, 24 and younger, are half of the homeless population in Greater Minnesota.
Wow. So you think of people that it's already a struggle during the pandemic. You don't have a home. You don't have technology outside of if you have a phone, but you don't have technology to either work or to do schoolwork. And yeah, they fall through the cracks very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of the meals that that family was really counting on for those kids were being provided in the school setting. And maybe that was the consistency that they had in their life at, you know, right. for that family right now, and for the parent to go out and do whatever they needed to do to make the next steps to get into housing, whether it was employment or getting a social security card, an updated ID. It could be safety from domestic violence mm-hmm. and dealing with the court system. So there's a whole variety of different things that that parent would be navigating. I think another myth buster mm-hmm. is that a third of homeless adults are working.
Wow. Because yeah, there's that stereotype that, oh, they must not work. They're just lazy and they just beg for money, walk around the street, whatever. But yeah, that's not the case.
No, it's not. I think it's easy to try to prescribe solutions, but once you hear stories and people explain what happened for them to become homeless, you trust the story, and you know that, wow, you know, domestic violence is a huge contributor for women, mm-hmm. Women and families, and that unaffordable rent piece. Well, that's a math problem that so many people who are on the edge could be that close to experiencing that type of challenge.
Wow. So you talked about some other barriers to getting housing, you know, something that we take for granted as whether it's identification, a social security card. What are some other barriers that are probably more hidden barriers that we wouldn't think about?
Well, the availability of getting into housing, of course, we talked a little bit about. So not only is unaffordable rent contributing to people becoming homeless, a lack of affordable units that meet homes for people is also a barrier. Low vacancy rates. A lot of communities in Willmar, we're way less than 3%. And sometimes it's been reported at 1%. And so that's a very low vacancy rate. Sometimes there's chronic health issues. There can be mental health issues that can contribute to being homeless. It's also exacerbated when you become homeless. So there could be mental health issues that really get a lot more amplified if somebody does become homeless, because it's such a stressful situation to try to be thinking about, where am I going to sleep tonight? Where are we going to get food? You know, thinking about all those next steps, about just like the health and safety of getting through today, and then just to think bigger. So when I think about homelessness, and I think about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's one of the first things I learned in my psychology classes. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to meet your safety, security, and basic needs before you can thrive in those other areas. And that's why home is such an important part of children's thriving in school, for seniors thriving in communities, for adults to be productive members of their community. You know, housing is the foundation.
So thinking about urban areas, and I know this year we haven't heard about it as much, but last year we heard a lot more about the tent cities and the encampments instead of shelters. And I think in greater Minnesota, and probably all of Minnesota and the Twin Cities metro too, why are people choosing to do that? And maybe it's not a choice. Obviously they might be being forced, or that's their only option, but tell me about tents and encampments and what that all means.
So there's several different factors that are contributing to more people sleeping outside. So one is that we lack enough shelter beds to bring people inside. According to the HMIS system, which is the statewide data place or data center for organizations that provide homeless service or many transitional housing programs and other programs throughout the state, input information into the system. And we know that 80 of 87 counties across the state do not have enough shelter beds to meet the need. And that was actually before the pandemic hit. So once the pandemic hit, shelters had to reduce the capacity of people for social distancing to make sure that people could stay safe. And so people were either shifted outside or motel units were obtained to put more people into isolation. The other piece of that is that there are over 50% of homeless adults have a chronic health condition.
Okay.
So very high risk populations in terms of the health and well-being. So going into shelter for some folks was scary because of the fact that if they did get the virus, it could be very deadly. And the data does say that people experiencing homelessness, you know, they become hospitalized and die at much higher rates than the general population for a lot of different reasons. But again, housing is healthcare. You know, it contributes to the well-being and the ability to social distance. So those factors all contributed, I think, to people sleeping outside. So unsheltered homelessness in Greater Minnesota increased by 36%.
Wow.
Between 2015 and 2018. In the metropolitan region, it increased by, I think it was like over 90%.
Why do you think that is? I mean, that's just astronomical.
Well, I mean, I kind of go back to that original reason that people become homeless is that, one, we lack enough housing to meet the needs. It's not affordable. There's a mismatch between what people can afford and what the income of that person is. And we lack enough units across the state. So those complicating factors are continuing to contribute. When you think about people who are low income or very close to becoming homeless, you know, like I said before, it's one, you know, car breakdown or one job loss or one family health crisis away from actually experiencing homelessness. And once those things get on your rental record, it's really hard to overcome.
Right.
So then landlords, because vacancy rates are so low, landlords can be really selective in who they put into their units. And so it kind of becomes a downward spiral once somebody does lose their housing. So getting back into housing is that much more challenging. You know, the nice thing about like the option to have shelters in a community is that in shelters, it's a starting point to gaining that long-term stability. They can work with a staff person to help them navigate. They might have relationships with local landlords who say, you know, we work with this organization to help people transition from homelessness and get them into permanent housing, but it does take time. And so in those communities that don't have access to shelter or shelter resources, people are at an even greater disadvantage because the folks that would help somebody navigate somebody experiencing homelessness or that family just aren't there and they're not present.
Wow. That's something too, that I guess I never thought of with having shelters. Obviously they're a very good thing to have to shelter people without homes, but also the access to those resources, you know. And one of those things I think of too, if you do not have housing and you're working a low wage job, just trying to get together if you have to do first and last month's rent or down payment or whatnot, that can be very difficult. And I'm assuming that could be that is a big burden on people.
Yeah, it's a huge burden. And sometimes there are programs to help with that, but some of the other burdens too that are sort of hidden and people don't often think about are the application fees. So just to apply to get into a unit, there might be a standard $25 or $30 rental application fee. That person will never get that back. And you probably have to apply to many places. Mm-hmm. And you might have to deliver those applications. So if that person has transportation or access to somebody who can bring them, you know, and those rental offices probably open during the daytime, mm-hmm. you know, so, you know, it just sometimes just like getting into housing isn't just a first and last month's rent issue. While that is significant, it's also all the other needed documents and steps that go along with that mm-hmm. To get into that housing.
I think of if you're in a situation in domestic abuse, and thinking of those things that you need, social security card and just everything, you may have left without any of those documents. And so that's even more difficult, proving your identity. And yeah, just so many different variants. And it, when you have housing, you just take it for granted and it's like, okay, no big deal. But it is, you have to have all of those things that add up in order to even get your foot in the door. And with a shortage of housing, like you said, they can be selective.
Yeah. And so if people are struggling to get into that shelter, for example, and maybe they're staying with friends for a while, maybe they're able to get into a motel unit. If they're able to get into housing right away, but sometimes it takes months. The average waiting list in Minnesota, we call it the coordinated entry waiting list. And that's also through the HMIS program, the Homeless Management Information System. The average wait is over 12 months.
That's people are waiting for shelter?
To get into housing.
To get into housing.
When they seek that resource. So
12 months.
And we have seen a correlation in the data that shows us the longer people stay in shelter, the more successful they are into getting into permanent housing. So shelter is really, you know, that starting point into gaining that long-term stability and getting back on track, and getting into housing, which is really what we want.
Absolutely.
This session in the recent months, we've been talking a lot about how shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness, and that we really need both those solutions to create a compassionate and smart response to homelessness and housing instability in Minnesota.
Can you say that again? Shelter saves lives.
Yeah, shelter saves lives. Housing ends homelessness.
That's great. That's a great soundbite. That's a great soundbite and something that I think people can easily remember and think about. Because I think it's so often too, people just don't know what to do. One, they don't see it in greater Minnesota, but two, if they did, that, you know, just ignore it or pretend it's not there.
I think a lot of people feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Because they don't know what to do. And, you know, I would encourage people to reach out to their local shelter provider to get involved. If there might be volunteer opportunities, there might be giving opportunities. I would invite them to our Homeless Day on the Hill, which is just a couple of weeks away, March 9th through the 11th, where you can advocate with your legislators and let them know that homelessness matters to you. It impacts your community. And we know how to solve it. Mm-hmm. And we need to make those investments into our shelter and housing system to continue to advance and push the needle to a place where we don't have homelessness in Minnesota, or it's short, brief, and quickly changed. Mm-hmm.
This may seem like a naive question, but I think a lot of people don't even know where to look. How can you find out if you have a shelter in your community? I think that there's a lot of communities where people don't even realize that there is a shelter. How can people best go about finding that and offering to help?
Yeah, the local continua of care, they are the glue that holds the housing and homeless service providers together in each region. So there's a Southwest continuum of care. There's a Southeast. There's one for Hennepin, Ramsey, one for the suburbs. And then there's one in St. Louis County, one in Northeast Minnesota, and then Northwest Minnesota, as well as West Central, and then the Central region. But I could provide you with a website.
Yeah, that'd be great.
To get that information. But they're really that first step to get connected with resources, but they also know who are the shelter providers and how to help.
Great. That's good to know. Yeah, if you could get me that, we'll put that in the show notes, because again, people ignore it. They don't know what to do, but maybe being able to look at a website and be like, okay, I know that there's these places in my community, I can ask them for if I can help, if I can donate money, time, whatnot. I think that's just a big part of it, is just making people aware that they, one, that there is a problem, but two, that they can help solve the situation. So what, I guess that leads me to the big question, what can we do? Like, at individuals, what can we do now to help end homelessness?
Well, we need more resources into the homeless system. And so being a partner in our advocacy work, you can go to our website, mnhomelesscoalition.org. You can sign up for our newsletter and you can get updates about what's happening across Minnesota in terms of our advocacy work. You can get connected with a local organization. We also have a list of all of our members on our website, and you can get connected with local providers in the community, volunteer your time, you can make a gift. It costs money to bring people inside. It costs money to do advocacy work. And depending on where your heart leads you, people can make a gift to either impact our advocacy work or maybe a local provider of shelter or transitional housing in their community.
That's great. That's great. Do you have, I guess it'd be probably be more anecdotal, but like a success rate of people that have been tracked or recorded being able to find housing? Is there any way of tracking that or knowing, you know, some success stories or how often that might be?
Yeah, I have some data that shows that the longer people stay in shelter, the more likely they are to exit to a permanent destination. So a permanent housing destination. And in greater Minnesota, when that shelter is available, for the data that we pulled, there were no exits to homelessness. Right. And that just shows that I feel like that just shows the tenacity of how organizations really work really hard to help connect people who are experiencing homelessness to a solution. And so I was really surprised by that data point, but also it was so heartening to see a data point like that. That's truly incredible.
That really is. I mean, you think about it, none left their permanent housing situation if they were homeless before, correct?
So yeah, nobody went back to homelessness.
Went back to being homeless. Yeah. I mean, that is, that's the goal.
Exactly. Yeah.
That is the goal.
So yeah, they might have gone to a transitional housing program. So maybe a time limited situation, or it could have been into permanent housing, or it could be a treatment program. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people need that next step too, whether it be for mental health or chemical health or a combination.
What should people do if they're visiting a regional center or maybe the Twin Cities or somewhere, and you know, you might see some homeless people on, you know, on the side of the road, just anywhere, you know, what advice do you have to people when they see someone who is homeless? What, I think, like I said before, the immediate reaction is to ignore them, but I think that's the wrong thing to do. What's the best thing to do?
Well, I think to react with compassion is the most important part of how we look at homelessness and how we think about who people who are experiencing homelessness. I think words matter. I hear a lot of people say like the homeless, but it's people, children who are experiencing homelessness. You know, I was homeless for a short time as a child. Well, I'm a person who is so much more than a housing label that I experience at a point in time. And so treating people and seeing people and being compassionate, I think those are really important pieces. There are also great homeless service providers who do such great work, but they need support from their community. So there are certain organizations that will have street outreach teams and or certain organizations that, especially during the cold snap, they opened up additional spaces, or they created warming spaces. Well, all of that costs extra dollars. And one of the things that we've really seen with our providers across the state is how underfunded those providers truly are. Just to give you a sense of the cost for shelter, last April, of course, after COVID hit, and when we knew that we had to open up isolation spaces across the state, organizations were like, we need resources to be able to do this, to be able to put the most at-risk people experiencing homelessness in their shelters into motel rooms. And so we advocated with our partners to secure $26.5 million for the Emergency Services Program, which funds additional motel rooms, the staffing, the hygiene, the PPE needed for those providers to have safe spaces. Just to give you a sense of the scale, the typical annual budget for the Emergency Services Program is less than $1 million a year currently for the whole state.
For the whole state?
The entire state.
And so last year it was 36, you said?
26 and a half million. And that was just for COVID response. Wow. So that program is deeply underfunded. And so we're advocating to get the base funding to 15 million per year, or 15 million per biennium.
Sure. I think I want to close out this podcast going back to talking about how the homeless population, they are individuals, they are people. Everyone has a story. And I think that's so hard. People don't want to be overlooked. And those that are homeless, I am guessing, feel very overlooked. And that's, I think, a tough pill to swallow if you are one of them, or if you've ever been in any situation in trauma or whatnot, being overlooked and not having your voice heard. And I think that's something that hopefully our listeners can think about is, these are people, like you said, these are moms and dads and kids and grandkids, and they're not homeless by choice. It's circumstance. And yeah, compassion goes a long way. And yeah, I think we could, I'll use a lot more of that.
Yeah, I'm going to add compassion plus action.
Ooh, I like that. Compassion plus action. I love that. And what's your website again? If people do want to get involved in advocacy, what's your website and what more can they do?
mnhomelesscoalition.org. We also have very active social media accounts, Twitter, Facebook, and we are also on Instagram. And of course, they can get the newsletter by signing up on our website. You can make a gift, and you can connect with local providers to get engaged in the work as well. We also have Homeless Day on the Hill coming up from March 9th through 11th, and there's actions each day that you can be a part of. The first day we have a press conference. The second day we have a program that will be inspiring and talking about what we've been able to accomplish over the last decade and through COVID response, and to really inspire people to take action and connect with their legislators. And then we'll have an action alert. We'll have a tweet chat with legislators. So we're breaking it up a little bit this year, just because being on technology and in Zoom is so much different than last year when we were able to gather. It was actually the last event we did before the shutdown was Homeless Day on the Hill. We had almost 1,000 people who gathered with us. It's the largest housing advocacy day on the Hill in Minnesota. And it was so energizing and so inspiring. And then 2 days later, we had the stay-at-home order that was announced. And so this year we will be advocating in a virtual space, but still critically important in such a critical time when so many of our neighbors and relatives who are homeless need us to speak out and let our legislators know that it matters.
Great. Well, for our listeners, you'll be hearing this and you will be able to participate in the Day on the Hill. So this will be airing a week before the Day on the Hill. So I hope that people will take advantage of that in all the social media outlets. And Rhonda, I hope that you'll come back to the show again. I think we have so much more to talk about and so much more to dig into, but thank you for bringing this issue to the forefront to our listeners, and best wishes for a successful Day on the Hill.
Thank you so much, Julie. It was a pleasure to be here and to talk with you.
You've been listening to the Center of Everywhere podcast, where we explore stories of rural Minnesotans who are making a difference in their communities. Rural isn't in the middle of nowhere. It is in the center of everywhere. Thank you.